Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. I think it was like a frog in Looney Tunes.
That was it.
I just see him dancing with his little frog legs.
The little cane thing. Wait, did he have a cane in my head all day?
Yes, he did. He most certainly did.
Okay. I was thinking, I was like, wait, that's not just an image. I'm not making it up in my own head. Be like, why do I remember that?
No, that is real.
I feel less unhinged.
Stall the ball a minute. Did you get a new tattoo?
Yeah.
On your arm? Yeah. This arm?
Yeah, I was saying I was getting our, like, the one that we all got together covered up. Not because I hate you, but because your man absolutely
butchered me. Yeah, but you never told me you actually fucking did it.
And it bled out something fierce. And
or well, you did, but you never showed
blurred.
It to me.
Oh, I forgot.
That is fucking amazing.
Yeah, like, you literally can't see it now. Like, the ridiculous thing. So I've got a lovely little moth, even though I'm kind of...
I was going to say, are you not terrified of moths?
No, I'm not terrified. They're just always all in my business, and it aggravates me. But then I was like, it's cute, and it has like a little moon. We're all about it. It has like a lovely little sky, some stars. But then also, I looked it up. You know, because I feel like if I'm seeing them literally every fucking day, there has to be a reason for it. Because even though they're meant to be nocturnal, I even see little bastards in the daytime, so I'm like,
they're
okay, what gives?
It's always just one.
It's weird. And even if I kill it, one just comes back. It's really weird. So I looked it up, and there's like a spiritual meaning, as in like it's like a guardian and shit like that. So I was like, okay, cool.
Don't kill him ever again, basically.
Lizzie just straight up murdering her guardian. Like, fuck you, you're not doing your job.
Sure, they'd be flying in my face when I'm writing or trying to watch a bit of telly, like aggravating me. So they're bringing it on themselves. But now that I've been educated as to their probable purpose in my life, I'm like, okay, well, now
and
I'm just going to give you a little backhand and swat you out of my face.
You should maybe not kill them, because humans are fucking moths up anyway, and because of artificial lighting, that's why they're coming out during the daytime now, because they can't tell the difference anymore because of light pollution. So leave the moths alone, is what I say.
we're G with them now.
Yeah. No, it's fab. Sorry,
thank you.
Did not expect to sidetrack us, but like it's actually.
I actually totally forgot. I didn't even say it to you, but I'll send you a picture, like a proper picture. But yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I'm offended, but it's okay.
The guy was super lovely. He was actually an Ennis man. Weirdly, I was like, I can't fucking escape you. He was lovely, and you know, he was asking like what hobbies I have and everything, and like I told him about the podcast, and he was like, oh my god, that is so cool. And him and his missus now listen to us, he told me. He was like, I'll make me and the missus listen to it because they love all that shit. And he was like, it's really cool to hear like girls doing it. He's like, she always usually hear like men talk about really gruesome shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he was a big fan of the concept.
That is fair, actually. There's not a lot of other like exclusively female podcasts that I know of. There's two that I know of off the top of my head, or three.
Well, I know
the rest that I would listen to would be all men.
I mainly listen to lads, but there is, so you have My Favourite Murder, love them.
And That's Why We Drink.
All Killer No Filler, That's Why We Drink.
Red Handed.
Yeah.
We know all of you guys. If any of you listen to us, we listen to you too, okay? We love everyone.
That's it.
Shout out to us all.
I can't think of any more. Because they do tend to be more graphic, so that's kind of what we are looking for.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
That is true.
No, I agree.
I don't think it's an overly like either or dominated market, but I wouldn't know.
No,
I wouldn't know the statistics.
I feel like it's not catered more towards women, but don't you even see like funny jokes on TikTokers, and it's always like women walking in the woods and looking like they're having a peaceful time and listening to class music, but then it plays what they're listening to, and it's always like true crime shit. And they're walking around skipping as if they're listening to like the Happy Mondays or whatever. And so I was like, Daniel was murdered in the forest, but you know, stupid shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can I just say what a delight it is to be returned to the podcast finally?
Oh yeah. Well, let everybody know. Because we were making fun of you being a bit of a geriatric.
I mean, you're not wrong. So more geriatric than as I left the podcast. In short, I'm mentally fucked. How do I even describe it? So I have something called shutdown disassociation, which in the long and short of it means my brain is so fucked up that when I get stressed or upset or whatever the fuck my brain decides is wrong with it, my whole body starts to shut down. I will have seizures. It can mimic the same symptoms of a spinal cord injury, which is why I can't remember if I talked about it before, but I would often lose the ability to walk. And now we know why. So that's basically it. I don't understand it fully yet myself. It's going to be a long fucking journey of figuring this shit out. But yeah, childhood trauma. Thank you very much. You've given me yet another illness.
A1.
But shout out to all of the doctors in the very expensive military hospital that I went to, because they were fucking fantastic, even though they tortured me for 3 days. But it was necessary torture, and it got me results, so I can't complain about that. They were lovely. They were the best doctors I've ever dealt with in my life. So they will never hear this, but I'm shouting them out anyway.
Actually, look, it's nice to know that you appreciate them. You know?
I really did. I really, really did. They were the best doctors I've ever dealt with, and I've dealt with many. So... Mm. Yeah, so that's that is the sus with what's wrong with
me
so far, because, you know, the list is ever growing.
It would be boring if it wasn't.
Exactly. And yeah. I like the fact that I can't be a hypochondriac, because there literally is always something wrong with me. So that's kind of nice. It's nice to know I'm not a hypochondriac.
Sure, look, we make money moves.
You're in good form today, Lizzie, anyways.
I actually am, and I don't know why.
Were you working today?
No, I wasn't, so that probably...
There we go. Mystery solved.
I was like, she's either in good form or she's a little bit delirious after work. There's, like, no in between.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, yeah. Usually the delirium, like, drums out, like, going fucking full front when I've been stressed. But no, I've literally just been lying down watching telly all day, so, you know, I'm fair relaxed.
I just deeply enjoyed the fact that you were surprised by your own good mood. You're like, I do forget, but I don't know why.
It's like, oh my God! Because I'm usually in foul form.
What is serotonin?
Who is she? Because usually the bitch always says fucking sayonara and I never know who she is. But today she's here and she is present. So hopefully
I have a red bump on my elbow. For look at the
Cuiva.
What have you been doing?
I don't know. I've had it for ages and it's fucking sore to the touch. But it's not like anything. It's just there.
Is it a cut or is it a bruise?
It looks like a spot, but it's not.
Oh, I was going to say, it looks like, do you know if you ever fall on like carpet?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you fall on the road and you just skin it? It's not cut, but it's skinned.
I'm very aggravated.
Because did you ever like cut them open as a child? Because I still have loads of scars on my elbows that they'll never go away from cutting open my elbows as a child.
Maybe it's like one of them.
Like on
purpose. That I literally got when I saved somebody's life. Like, literally saved somebody's life. And it looks like a little worm. Like, I have a little scar on my elbow. I don't know if you saved
someone's life. Whose life was that badly in danger that Lizzie was their only option?
Well! I am shocked.
Who? Go on, tell me the story. Was it Lizzie?
What?
Was it you, like, small Lizzie?
Yeah, it was small me. It wasn't old, spiteful me. So, basically... What had happened was, me and one of the cousins and her mum were going to a circus, and it was in the park down to town, right? And we were crossing over the road, but stupid little bastard child didn't see some owler driving a red fucking shitty little car speeding up the road, because your man obviously wasn't looking, because he was his owler, don't even know if the hooter was fully with his wits, and he was literally going to mangle her, like, as in if she didn't like hurry on, she was getting flattened by this car. So I had to like take a step back, push her, then launch myself off the fucking road so I didn't get run over, and I fell in glass.
Was she even grateful?
She was grateful, yeah, because I suppose she didn't die, but I suppose she didn't really understand because she was younger than me as well, so I don't think she understood the full ramifications of nearly being mowed down by OAP.
Yeah, because I feel like at that age, it's always like, why the fuck did you push me? Not, you just saved my life from being... literally roadkill.
Yeah. And then I refused to go to the hospital to get stitches because I was terrified of the hospital after my nan made me watch Casualty, and I always thought if I went in for an operation I'd die in the operating theatre. always do. So I've been literally, it is the gammiest looking scar. Like, it's literally, it's so stretchy as well, but I've no feeling in it at all. God. Like, I could so easily shove a needle through that and I would not feel a thing. I definitely did nerve damage or something because there's nothing there. And it's so gammy. And I was so upset because it was in around the time of Halloween and the cut was so big it kept on opening. And I wore my, I had like a white Halloween costume that I wore to school and my elbow opened up and I bled all over my lovely costume and I was devastated. Because then I couldn't wear it for actual Halloween.
Is that not Halloween vibes though?
Yeah, but it was only on my elbow, so it wasn't cool. It was like, oh, she's got me arm. Well done. You know what I mean?
Fair. I mean, you could have just like left the blood there and then taken your arm out of it and just kind of put it in your body and then it just looked like you kind of lost an arm in a fucking T-Rex accident. I don't know. Whatever your backstory needs to be.
I mean, fair. But little me never thought of that, to be honest. I was very in my feelings about how I was smited with my new injury.
Fair and understand. I like how Cuiva's red bump has led us here. Like,
yeah.
It's been annoying me. It's like, that's my elbow tip. And then that's it.
It's so odd.
It's so fucking annoying. And it's raised as well. I don't know. I'm actually going about to buy. I feel like taking Savannah's advice and fucking cutting it open.
I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
When did I say cut it open?
Did you not say?
You did.
Don't think so.
Did you not ever cut open your elbows? Did you not ever cut them open?
Didn't mean do it yourself.
Oh, wait, she means, oh... By accident,
I meant like as you if you fell as a child because I still have loads of scars from that and sometimes they get irritated still and they'll raise and they'll go redder. This is why we wait until people finish their sentence before the tangent, because you were about to mutilate yourself on advice I did not give.
But you know what, to be fair,
I still kind of want to do it though.
Oh yes, okay, on to the podcast for this week. Let's dive in.
Split. So we decided that it's probably time that we did a heavy hitter. Because not that, like, the child rape and murder that we did during the drunk episode wasn't heavy. Obviously it was. It wasn't.
I'm very sure other stuff.
Do you mean? Yeah. We could go a bit like worse if we wanted to.
Yeah, this
and
is,
what
yeah.
a better way than more child murder and rape. Ooh. So, you know, sticking to our guns and our theme as we fucking usually do. Because we have some sort of issue that's unknown and undiagnosed as to why.
I'll have you know mine is diagnosed, thank you very much.
Okay, well you can get away with it. Me and Cuiva have no excuse. So we're the enigmas in this situation.
It's okay. We'll get you strapped to those electrodes. It'll be fine. We'll figure it out.
We'll have a fucking owl whale of a time. And so we've decided to do the Moores murders. Now this is a fucking infamous case, especially over in England. I only really know about it because this happened in the area where my mum is from. And when I was a small child, I mean a small child, they left for a football blitz. I seen that there was a documentary about this, decided to put it on, left traumatised at the age of 12. So, you know, fully all about. And I might ask Kaz if she wants to speak on what it was like after it, because she used to listen to, there's one of the boys and his mom used to make pleas on the radio all the time, like literally until the day the woman died. So they used to listen to her talk on the radio all the time. I think she even went up to the Moors at one point, and then there is she told me a story before of that same kid. So I think his name Keith Bennett, his mom's Winnie Johnson, the lady that used to like talk on the radio quite a lot. Mm-hmm. When she was a kid, his teacher showed them the roll book of the day that he was marked absent, and I think she was only like 6.
Jesus.
Very traumatizing to be like, oh well, you know, don't talk to strangers, kids.
Very intense. So, you know,
very.
I mean,
intense.
Yeah, it's effective, but like a bit much.
Mm.
But yeah. Also, is it though? It's like,
is it? I think if anything, it caused issues.
But it definitely would have mentally scarred me. But I would have been terrified to talk to literally anyone. Well, yeah, that's not really a good thing either, is it?
No,
but you wouldn't.
She never let me do anything as a child, so I was never let her do anything. I wasn't even allowed to walk to the fucking shop, so I'm blaming these bastards for this.
Fair and understandable.
I'm blaming them. Now I'm even more angry than I should be, because now I'm feeling like I'm personally attacked.
Victim by proxy.
Mm-hmm. Fucking bad. Anyway.
Oh God.
So even before I get into this, my source for this week's episode is going to be The Moores Murders, and that's by Alan R. Warren. There's a good few books about them, there's a good few documentaries, but his was the only book I found that wasn't solely focusing on their relationship and trying to romanticise it.
Oh, like a Bonnie and Clyde
thing.
Because
there were so many people doing that. Yeah, and it was so fucking weird. Like, Bonnie and Clyde, I could understand this. No.
Yeah, because at least they were just like bank robbers. I mean, they might have killed one or two people, but not like this.
Not kiddie fiddlers and murders.
Yeah, exactly.
A bit fucking excessive. Like, ignoring the fact that 5 kids were murdered, you know? Yeah. I wasn't about it. But definitely check out his book and it's very detailed. I couldn't get over it. It actually made me a bit fucking sick.
Honestly.
They're dirty, dirty bastards. So for anybody that hasn't really got a clue about what the Moors murder was, it was basically a string of horrific child murders that took place in Manchester between the years 1963 and 1965. So my episode's basically going to be delving into the two monsters that murdered these two kids and their first victim. So we're going to start off with Ian Duncan Stewart, and he was born on January 2nd, 1938 in Glasgow, Scotland. Ian came from a single parent household and his mum had a job as a waitress and she really struggled to make ends meet because I don't think she had much. What are you laughing? I see you skitting already.
His ma had a job as a waitress.
Is that what way I said it?
Yeah. It's the word ma for me that really just got me. It's like, not his mother, his ma.
Well, she wasn't ma.
You settled into this. I love it. I love it so much. I'm so comfortable already.
I'm very comfortable right now. So yeah, as I was saying, she really struggled to make ends meet because wages weren't well paid and it was only a single income coming into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was noticed by a lot of people how much that she was struggling and how much, like, she was, like, she literally couldn't deal with the kid and he was only 2 months old. So as a result, he had to be given away. And I don't know if it was like a claw or like through like an adoption agency or if somebody just intervened and they found a family for Ian to go to. It never really said. So
could be like
he was given up.
Left at the fire station, such.
No, because she had contact with him. She was allowed to see him all the time. So he was given over to the Sloan family, and they were just like your average middle class family. They had plenty of money coming into the house that they could support their own family, their own kids, and as well as look after Ian. And they would put him through school and everything. And their house wasn't too far away from Ian's home house, so his ma could really see him whenever she wanted. And likewise, when he grew up, he could just say to them, oh look, I want to go see Ma today, and they, yeah, okay, go on. Like, they were actually very, very nice to Ian and they treated him very well and didn't try to stop any communication between the two, because I suppose it's not really her fault that she was a lone parent and was struggling to pay for him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like, she can't help the fucking shitty hand that she was dealt, so they weren't going to stop communication, which is fair enough.
Can't condemn the woman for trying to give him a better life than she could offer.
Absolutely not. But Ian's behavioural problems started very, very early, at 4 years of age.
Oh.
Yeah, very, very young. And it was reported that he had broke a dog's leg, set another dog on fire, and decapitated a fucking cat. So, you know, we're off to a great start.
What the actual ever-living fuck? What?
Yeah.
How did they know that he did all these things? Did they know that he was doing them when he was a kid? Because first of all, fucking electric chair.
I don't know if
person.
Literally. See, I don't know what person is letting a 4-year-old one near knives or matches. So I know it's the 40s, but come on, no excuse. So I
don't
know
shit,
if it's
like
a case of like they've caught him doing things. They're like, oh my god, Ian, fucking stop it. Do you know what I mean? But just like pass it off as in like, oh well, he has behavioural issues because we're not his real family.
I feel like no matter
a thing
if
or not
you were a fucking, like, living in the fucking Stone Age, decapitating small animals for the crack was always fucked up.
Always, yeah.
Like,
oh,
I feel like,
look,
do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
But, like, I know
what
you mean as well, but also, like, if people actually didn't know that he was doing that shit back then and didn't do anything about it.
Unless it was,
yeah,
like who was it? Like, fucking, who was it that the father just thought that he was real interested in science and stuff?
Oh,
not,
shit.
Fucking,
oh, who was it?
Oh, your man, and he had
Gein?
Was it Ed Kemper or Gein?
No, it wasn't Gein.
So many people have decapitated fucking cats.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he had a creepy picture, didn't he? And he was like stuffing them, or he was saying
he wanted
to learn how to stuff them, or
he had like a little box of
yes,
a
the father was
into
taxidermy.
Oh lads, I can't remember.
Fuck it anyway. We know who.
Do you know what? It's
going
to come to us later on, and one of us are going to end up screaming into the microphone. So
it'll turn out it was Gein and we were right in the first place.
No,
like,
I don't think it was.
I don't think it was either. Because Gein,
no,
because no, Gein's
right.
father was an alcoholic waste of space, so he didn't do anything. Who the
yeah.
fuck was it? Wasn't Pee-wee, was it?
Wait, it was. It fucking
was.
Was
it Pee-wee?
It was Pee-wee. It was little fucking Kerosene Dreams. No, you're right. It was him.
Okay,
Kerosene
perfect.
Dreams.
Thank
yep,
you.
There we go. We've solved it. So, yeah, so if it was like Pee-wee, where they were just like, this is, he's just so interested. He's so interested in how things work. Like, what happens if I set a cat on fire?
I don't want to know the integral detail of a fucking cat's...
Honestly. No.
It's not in childhood either. Like, do you know what I mean?
No.
But I feel like it's not good for kids to be dissecting shit like that young either.
No way.
It desensitizes you when you're too small.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I never even understood, like, them dissecting frogs in school and shit. Like, I never understood that either. Like, I don't know why that was ever allowed.
I feel like when you're too young, you kind of grow up then seeing the cat as, like, it dead versus it alive.
Yeah. Because you're always going to have that image, because I'm sure it's shocking to see, so it's going to stick in your brain anytime.
Yeah.
And if you're to see a cat, you're like, oh, I've seen one of you slice it open. You know?
Yeah. And then you get the urge to do it again, because it's like, oh, that was fun that one time I did it. And then, like, next it's little fucking Johnny who lives next door. Like, it only escalates. It doesn't fucking get better. Bad ideas.
Very bad idea indeed.
But look.
And when Ian was 9, the Sloanes uprooted and they moved to the Glasgow suburbs. But so this meant that he couldn't see his mum then as much as he wanted, because trying to get in and out of the city... Sure, they had no fucking railway, or not railways, but they had no, like, bus services that would go through regularly, or any sort of transport that would be able to get him at that young age to see his mum. So maybe instead of seeing her, like, once every week or twice every week, it could have been once every month, once every 2 months type of situation.
Yeah.
But once he had settled, things seemed like they were actually going to go well for him, because he'd managed to make himself friends, and he even got accepted to the Shadowlands Academy for Gifted Children. And that sounds metal as fuck. Shadowlands Academy for Gifted Children sounds like fucking Harry Potter.
How do I apply? Because I want to go there.
I want to go. If they don't have fancy robes and shit, I would be so disappointed.
Honestly, this is where we get our degrees in witchcraft, is in the Shadowland Academy.
Like, it's Shadowland. It's giving me, like, Sabrina Spellman vibes. Do you know when, like, she's at the... That's what I'm, envisioning.
Yeah.
A big fucking bust of Satan, but great. Mad vibes.
Big fan.
But, you know, Ian just had to go fuck it, didn't he?
Like, shocker.
Very shocked. Because violence against animals was no longer satisfactory to the fucking Seed of Chucky over here, and he then turned his attention away from small animals to kids.
Small children. There we go. Shocker.
And he began to torture younger kids in the neighbourhood. Now, I don't know, it was never mentioned in this book and I couldn't find it anywhere else, like on the internet, in what way he was torturing them, but I'd say he was, like, tormenting them, probably fucking cutting them and shit like that, because the man had a bit of a fucking knife kink as well, so, like, I would not put it by him. But we're not exactly sure what he had done. And then when he was 15, he began to burgle houses and ended up in juvenile court. And feeling like the whole world was against him, because God forbid people would find the torture of small animals, kids and home invasions troubling, Ian decided that he was going to become his own independent man and only look out for himself.
Oh, would you ever?
Ever fuck off, Ian.
Why is everyone against me? I just want to murder and rob people. Is that so wrong?
What if his older siblings, like, if one's from the Sloan family, should have bet the living life into this lad?
Oh, yeah, Scott.
Someone needed to bully him.
He needed a proper baiting off an older sibling. That's what he needed.
Yeah. One of an older cousin or something like that.
Even a cousin. A fucking neighbour would have done the job. Like,
humble him.
Just a fellow child bait him.
Make him beat of him. Because it's exactly what he deserved.
I feel like that's what some people just need.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you ever see some people, like, they would do the best now after a good baiting?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Just to crown them. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because they'd take it back and be like, okay, well, I need to change. Not saying violence should be used to make people change. But
sometimes it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes violence begets violence and you just can't help that. But I'm just saying, a lot of fucking violence would have been saved if somebody kneecapped this cunt when he was 15.
Absolutely.
That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when he started fucking decapitating cats, that's the fucking sign to start kind of half waterboarding him in the back garden, in the pond.
Yeah, like, I know he was 4, but still.
I'm 14. At least...
My God.
So with
I got a bit
this,
heated there.
It's look, it's acceptable. I am not. I will fully allow you to, because kicked this child at the age of 4 in the head? Absolutely. If I knew, it would have prevented all of this.
If I found my own doing some fucked up shit like that, I swear to God.
Not even gonna lie, if I caught any child of mine torturing an animal, I'd do prison time. I would. I'd just put me in prison for life, because I'd kill it on the spot.
You just know what it's going to turn into. I'm not being funny.
Yeah. Like, I'm not naive. I know what that means. Okay.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a successful
adult.
Like,
is it a very late stage abortion? Yes. But look, I'm sure there's ways and means around it.
I feel like I'm cursed to have one now.
No, you never know. I feel like because you think you will, you won't. You know? Yeah. You'd probably have a kid that turns into like a Mormon or something gross. You know?
Oh no, ew. I'd rather have a serial killer.
Or the fucking, what are they called? Jehovah's Witnesses that come around knocking on the doors asking you if you've had a blood transfusion and everything. Disgusting. Disgusting.
Locked.
Anyway.
Moving forward.
We move. Go on. So he ends up dropping out of school. And he starts taking any odd jobs that he can just so he can get himself a bit of money because he feels like, oh, well, if I work but still live under my mother's roof and listen to what she tells me, this makes me an independent man. So, you know, full sense. Full sense.
Oh my God, I love men when they're so intelligent. Like, he's so smart. Like, wow, you're a deep thinker.
Him here making fucking money moves. Idiot. Like, good man, Ian. But to absolutely nobody's
the
surprise.
Fucking original incel, like, please fuck off.
He fucking is, man.
Right?
Oh, I can't bear. I just would love to bully this man.
Like, your ma washes your jocks, but you have money, so ooh.
You're like, ooh, big man.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have. People tend to have money when they're not paying fucking rent.
You were not wrong.
No.
No, and his man was probably washing his jocks and making his dinner as well, like.
Abso-fucking-ly.
Oh, most definitely. Cleaning absolutely. His room for him. Fucking tucking him in at night.
And anyway, he was still with the Sloans at this point, so I guarantee you they'd be the type to still give him pocket money while he was working.
Oh yeah. Oh, I wouldn't doubt it at all. And they probably funded every other thing he wanted to do as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know those like TikToks of those girls making like, oh, gamer lunch for my boyfriend. And it's like blue food dye in a fucking glass of water. That's his man.
Oh my God, yeah. Fucking exactly that.
I'd really love to have a fight with him because I feel like we'd ruin his life.
We would.
Honestly.
I'm not being very presumptuous, but genuinely the three of us would.
I feel like we could emasculate anyone.
There's so much.
I feel like he was let away with so much as well. Like nobody ever corrected his behaviour.
Well, you're a hard man because you managed to kill a cat, did you? You fucking loser.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
Kill someone your own size there now. Go off and kill someone your own size and see what happens.
You know what I mean?
Nothing, because they'll beat the shit out of you.
Because even eventually, obviously not spoiler alert, but he wouldn't even kill adults, he'd kill kids. So it's like, you're literally pathetic.
Going for the weak and vulnerable because you can't fucking face someone your own size. Exactly what I was saying. Like, give it a go. Give it a fucking go and see
try
what happens.
It.
Give it a go.
Even any one of us, try me, bitch. Try.
Yeah, give it a fucking go. I'm small, but I'm nippy, man. Give it a fucking go. I'll take you down.
I'll fucking bite the shit out of you. I swear to God, I will.
Right. We're getting heated too early.
We are, because there's plenty
the
to
problem.
Be heated about later on.
Yeah. We're going to be so mad in another 5 sentences.
Oh,
so,
not even. I'd say 2.
Let's move forward. Okay.
Because even from this conversation, we will not be surprised that Ian's violent tendencies didn't quell overnight. At age 16, he was arrested after he attacked his girlfriend with a switchblade because he discovered that she had basically gone to a dance with another boy. Like, I can understand you'd have a bit of vim. You would be angry. Have it out with her. Don't fucking stab her. You know,
stabbing seems a bit excessive.
Just a tiny bit, you know?
But what was he stabbing her for, like?
Because they were together and he's seen this as cheating or she, like, she... I don't even think it was a case of she was, like, with this boy in that situation. Like, he was probably just a friend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, she wasn't even doing it.
Well,
that's
back then,
I mean,
wasn't
like,
dancing
was...
seen as, like,
yeah,
a thing? No, because you'd ask anyone
you know what I mean?
To
it
dance.
Wasn't
like,
just
you,
dancing.
You'd ask anyone to dance. Like, it was... You'd kind of ask... Like, there was obviously, if you were with someone, you probably would kind of stick with that one person. But it wouldn't be... It's not like shifting someone.
Hmm. And you never know, like, he could have been...
I think he was a bit of a fucking drama queen.
Yeah, and to be fair, he could have been a bit of a header. And she's like, well, I am not bringing him around to dance with all my friends, so I'm just going to bring, like, a lad friend.
Oh my God, she was embarrassed of him.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It could have been like that, do you know what I mean?
Can you blame her?
And thankfully, she was alright and she didn't die. You know, she was grand.
I sincerely hope she fucking dumped his ass after getting stabbed by him.
Oh, very, yeah. Oh no, of course
I feel like dumping was implied. I feel like if someone stabbed me like
yeah it's
a
I'm a
celeb
to get me out of here
anymore.
I will not be in this situation anymore, you know, and I feel like she did.
These things can go either way, they really can. It can be like, oh, but he didn't mean it, I shouldn't have gone to the dance without him, Because most of these cunts tend to be so manipulative as well.
That's
like,
true.
They just, they get in
it's because
heads.
I love you so much, you make me crazy.
Yeah.
But he was just a dopey 16-year-old at this point. So I don't feel like he had the full talent of manipulation at this present moment.
Fair. Okay.
Just at this moment.
Well then, so, good. Good to know that she dumped him.
Mm-hmm. And the Sloanes now were fully done with his bullshit. They're like, right, well, fuck you. You can go back and live with your ma. They were sick of putting up with him because, like, he was getting into scraps all the time. He was bringing them grief. Obviously, he was fucking cutting heads off cats. He was after stabbing his missus. This was too much for the Sloanes to handle. They were middle class as well, so they probably had a reputation to uphold. Do you know what I mean? Because they had money, like.
Yeah, and if they have, like, three other children?
Yeah, I'm not, can't remember, but he had, like.
Do we even know?
I think it was, like, three or four siblings or something.
Even if there was only one, it doesn't even matter. Like, they have other children, and if he's fuck acting, they're going to think, oh yeah, they can't raise their children, right? And they're going to start judging the other kids based on him.
Sure, he could turn around and attack one of the fucking kids as well, so.
That as well. The only thing I will slightly judge them for, only slightly, is that they shift him up back to his mum. His mum sounds like a lovely person. She doesn't fucking deserve that. Just fuck him out in the streets.
Completely fair, but I suppose his mum at this point, she was grateful to have him back. And she was now going to be in a position where she was going to be able to look after him because she had since moved to Manchester and remarried. So there was dual income coming into the house. She was finally settled. So she was able to have her kid back in her life and she'd get to see him all the time because I supposed once the Sloanes had moved to the suburbs, she was robbed of as much opportunity to see him. Do you know? So she was probably grateful to have him back regardless of what fucking trouble he was getting into. Ian's new stepdad was an Irish man by the name of Patrick Brady, and this is where he took on his last name because we all know him as Ian Brady, the horrific fucking serial killer. So he got rid of the last name Stuart, never went by Sloan, and he just adopted the last name. And Patrick was a fruit seller at the Smithfield Market, and he felt some sort of responsibility for Ian. I suppose, like, this new son is coming into his life, so he wants to try help him to the best ability that he can. So he actually gave him a job at the market as well.
Oh.
But, you know, Ian went and fucked it again, didn't he? Yeah, of course he did.
Shock.
Because within 3 to 4 months, he ended up getting the sack because he got caught stealing a bag of lead seals from a shop and he was fired and arrested for it.
What the fuck would you even need them for?
I'm only assuming he thought he'd be able to flog them and get more money, I'd assume.
That would just honestly.
Well, stupid, I mean, okay.
Good idea, but also lead is cheap as fuck.
Oh, yeah, it's like, it's not copper piping. Like, there's value in stripping copper piping.
You know.
Or wires and shit, like, you know what I mean?
Like, okay, congratulations, have it, I guess.
Like, he would have got pittance for that, I'd say.
We have covered, like, kerosene dreams, people with head injuries, batter thrown out windows, and all of them have more sense than this fucking moron.
He's an idiot, God bless us. An idiot.
Ian, who was only 17 at the time of his arrest, he was too young to be sent to Big Boy prison, because he was still a small child. So he was sent to 2 years in a British youth prison in Hatfield. And what was different about this place was it wasn't focused on punishment. They were very big on rehabilitation, so they were like, okay, if they step out the line, they're going into counselling. We're not going to punish them for any bad behaviour that they have because they felt like that was only taken 10 steps back. Which was, very forward for the time.
In absolute shock because I was not expecting you to say that. I was like, oh, reform school. This is where we get proper trauma.
Oh, no,
that's amazing.
No, like they were very big
actual on awareness.
Yeah. But this would have been a cushy gig for Ian, right? Really would have been a cushy gig if he would have just kept his mouth shut for the 2 years he was here, but obviously, you know, what did he have to go and do? Fuck it again. Because he'd get into
fights. Fucking annoying.
He got caught brewing alcohol in his room. And this was just a bit, too much of a step. So they're like, right, okay, he's causing too much of a ruckus here. We can't deal with him. So he was then sent to a different young offenders prison in Hull that was known for punishing its prisoners if they were out of line. So it's like, you had it grand and handy. Fuck you now. It's
you
what
could
you
have been a functional member of society. You could have just
he
done
really
that.
Could have.
That would have been the easy option.
Literally, if he would have taken any help that was ever handed to him, either be have his education fully paid for in that academy for gifted kids, if he just would have fucking stuck with that, or if he would have stuck with the job that his stepdad gave him and not act like a little rat bag piece of shit, or, you know, behave in the prison that you're being sent to. You're going to have a cushy going. You could go outside. You could get lessons.
Honestly.
You could get counselling. Now you're being shoved in a tiny little cell and have to shit in a hole.
Because you decided to be a fucking stereotype and make hooch, you big weirdo.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Oh, It actually makes me fucking sick. I get so angry because I'm like, you're actually such a loser.
Honestly, it's like he's trying his hardest to be what he became.
Yeah.
This seems intentional. Yeah. This doesn't seem like, you know, a murderer being made. This is, he tried his fucking best. To be one.
Yeah. I would think the same way. Which makes me even angrier. And on November 14th, 1957, Ian was released and he returned home to his mum in Manchester. He then got a job and started studying to become an accountant, and it wasn't long before he would end up at the Millwards Merchandising as a clerk in Gorton, which was just south of Manchester. And this would also be the place he would meet a certain leggy peroxide blonde bitch that we're going to get into now in a few minutes.
Test us some more.
Mm-hmm. And this bitch does test your patience.
He went into accountancy because he wanted to rob more.
Oh, don't you know? But it was also around this time that Ian became absolutely infatuated with Nazis, even going as far as teaching himself German so he could read Mein Kampf.
Sorry, what?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Oh, he...
A loser. I'm trying to be edgy, yeah, so I'm going to be a neo-Nazi.
And learn German just so I can read Mein Kampf.
God, he's such a fucking sad case. They're going, let me go be a Nazi. How about fucking be original?
Yeah.
Fucking idiot. Like, come up
with
something.
Where's your actual substance?
Right? Go join a cult.
Honestly.
Go join a fucking fancy new cult or something. Anything.
Go start one even.
Yeah.
Go be a Nazi. Oh, God. It's just embarrassing.
Yeah. Like. So fuck. And it gets worse. Much worse.
God, of course it does.
So now we're going to go on to the leggy peroxide blonde bitch that we were talking about earlier on. And this would be Myra Hindley. And she was born on July 23rd, 1942. And she was born to a working class family in Gorton, Manchester. But Myra also came from a broken home. Her father was an alcoholic army vet. When he bet her all the fucking time because he wanted her to have thick skin and he wanted her to toughen up. And her mum would beat her as well. They're like, well, we need to make you of hardy stock. So she just got bet all the fucking
solid
time.
Solid parenting.
10 out of 10, recommend. I'm surprised they didn't write parenting books.
Beat your kids. It makes complete sense.
But they were literally living in squalor as well. As in, their house was so run down. It was filthy. The whole family lived in one bedroom because the other rooms were so unlivable. And when she was 5, she had no choice to go live with her grandparents or her grandmother because they couldn't function in a house with, like, because she was the oldest sibling. So obviously their attention was going to be on the youngest one. So they went and sent her off to live with the granny, like, which, look, I suppose if you're in a tough situation, but these people were also bastards. And as well, I'll get into it later on, but they obviously came from not great beginnings, which you can't judge them for, but they ended up judging other people that were poorer than they were. And I'm like,
wait, how does that work?
It just said, I'll get into it later on, but it just made me tick, so I thought I'd bring it up now. But anyway.
Oh, God.
When she was just 8 years of age, a neighbourhood lad had scratched her on the face. They were having a bit of a scrap. He scratched her cheek and he drew blood. Obviously, she was like, terrified, scared, and ran home to her parents' house and told her dad and her mum what had gone on. And her father demanded that she track the lad down and knock him the fuck out. Look, I can't blame him because I know mine did that with me. Anytime somebody like hit me out in the terrace, I was told to go and hit them back. Because I know you have to stand up for yourself, but the way in which this man said it to Myra was a bit just not it, because he said, if you don't go back and hit this lad and knock him out, I'm going to beat you until you pass out. I'm going to teach you the lesson that you should have taught him. So she was a bit hesitant, but as well she was like, okay, I suppose, because she couldn't see anything else, and it's not our way out, and it's not like she could turn around and be like, all right, Dad, calm down, because he would have knocked the head off her. So she actually didn't have a choice in the matter.
No, it was beat or be beat.
Yeah.
Like,
she had no way out. So Myra eventually tracked the boy down and knocked the young lad out after throwing a series of punches at her father had shown her. So he taught her, like,
here.
How to fight.
Yeah.
What is this fucking Addie's dad in Attack on Titan?
Like, I
what
know.
What the fuck is this?
Like, literally. At 8 years of age. He was showing her moves that he was using on lads in the fucking army to knock out a small child. Like, it's
like, alright, fully here to teach your child a bit of self-defence when they need it, but to encourage them to army fucking annihilate the little kids in the neighbourhood is a bit fucking much.
It's just a tiny bit excessive, like.
Just a tiny bit. Fucking waterboarding little Jimmy next door because he stole her crayons, like.
Come on, like, you know? But also,
I'm stressed.
Apart from the trauma at home, Myra also carried guilt over the death of her very close friend, Michael Higgins. So the pair were just 13 years old at the time, and Michael had invited her to go out swimming in a reservoir with him. He was a bit of a shitty swimmer, but she was known to be actually a great swimmer for her age. Like, she was very, very strong. But she was like, nah, I'm not really arsed today, and she went off with another friend. So Michael ended up going to the reservoir alone, and unfortunately he did actually get into trouble while in the water, and he did drown. But learning this, like, Myra was fucking traumatized, and she blamed herself. She was like, if only I would have went with him. If he did get into trouble, I would have been able to save him, or he mightn't have even got into trouble at all. So she really did, like, that really, really fucked her up. Like, she was so close with his family even after his death that she became godmother to his future niece or nephew and everything. Like, she stayed close with them. So, I mean, like, they're the proper friendships where they're, like, their family are yours. You know, but she really did. And it traumatized her to the point that she actually turned to the church. Like, so she converted to Catholicism after it.
Jesus.
Yeah, because she wanted to make, like, her peace with God. She wanted to find salvation in her religion and everything. And that point's important to remember for later on, because she was such a Jesus freak. So just keep that to the forefront, if you know what I'm saying. Sorry, before I even move on, funny little tidbit about our Myra, stupid bitch. When she was older, she got into judo, right? Because obviously the aggression had been bet into her by her father. She found it really hard to find people to train with her because she was very slow to release on her grip, as in she would be choking bitches out and just not letting go. So I feel like this was also a sign. This was also a sign to be looking out for.
Bit of a red flag, just like a small one.
Just a small one, but a red flag nonetheless.
She's either going to be kinky or killy. It's one or the other.
Turns out she was both. But in 1961, at 18 years old, Myra had joined the Willwards Merchandising, where Ian was working, but she joined as a typist. And she became absolutely infatuated with Ian, especially when she learned that he had a criminal record. And if I say it once, I've said it 1,000 times. We like a bad boy, not a budding serial killer. It actually fucks me off. It's like, please. There's a clear difference. How are you confusing the two?
I don't understand. I do not understand.
I don't understand it myself. And at first,
like, what was it that gave her a lady boner? Was it, like, about the criminal record? Was it like, oh, maybe he'll beat me up too? Like, did she get into it at the end? Was she beat so much that it fucked her up that much that she thought, yes,
do you know what?
This is the way to go.
Well, she was probably used to that kind of, like, aggression. Just that kind of, like, constant, just, like, you know.
Yeah.
And the element of danger.
That's literally what I mean.
She only loves it.
Like, all she knows is fucking lunatic, so she really couldn't be with, like, a poet or a painter or something. Do you know what I mean? Someone, I give you roses. Like, no, that would make her sick. Like,
yeah.
So I could see it. But still.
And at first,
just get counselling.
Ian didn't really think much of Myra at all, only that he absolutely fucking hated her hair, because at this point she was only going blonde and it looked like quite shit. And she had burn marks on her legs from sitting too close to the fire at home. So he was like, oh, well, you're poor. You've no heating. You're sitting by the fire. Stay at your legs. You know, very judgy, Ian. Considering you're only been a leech. You know what I mean?
Where's your money?
Yeah. Shut up, like. But while fucking old Delulu Myra over here was writing stuff in her work diary, being like, oh, Ian looked at me today. I wonder if Ian is courting. I love Ian all over again. He is a cold and I would love to mother him. Like, she was full all in her delusions when he couldn't even stand the sight of her at this point. Very, very much obsessive. And in her head, I feel like she all, like, always thought that they were already going out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like a fantasy relationship had gone too real for her.
Yeah. So, like, she literally tried to make it, like, as possible as she could. And fair enough, she was successful, but regretfully so. And on December 23rd, the crew at Willwards, well, they had their annual Christmas party and they went to a nearby pub for drinks, and afterwards they'd return back to the mill, go into the office, do a few more drinks, but at least they're in their own space, you know? And when they returned, a few of the typist girls were very much in their moment. They were singing, they were drinking more, they were dancing their arses off, as they should. But then Ian had to come and fucking wreck the buzz. Not that he wrecked the buzz for them, because they did like him, but I mean, in general, he just wrecked the buzz because he was always a fucking plague. And he decides to join in. can't let the girls have their moment, has to intervene. And he gives them all a Christmas kiss each. And Myra then enters the room and Ian gives her a kiss as well. And to be honest, I think Myra was being a bit of a sad old, probably fucking skulking and gawking at him in the shadows. And when she's seen him giving out his Christmas kisses, she's like, well, this is my opportunity to fucking shine. This is my chance.
I can believe you. I fully believe you. I can see that happening.
I can fully see it. Fully see it.
And I could also see like the delusion after he did.
Oh yeah. But to be fair as well, their romance started as easy as that. Literally as easy as that. Just a kiss at a Christmas
party.
That
was the moment.
That was the moment. But can I actually just say, can we petition to just abolish work Christmas parties? Because yeah, they're great crack, but bad decisions are always made. Case in point, example number one.
Yeah.
Case in point.
I mean, you're not wrong.
No.
You were not wrong.
There's always...
People drink too much and then weird shit happens.
It's
and then
always weird
speak
shit.
To each other the next day.
Oh. Ugh. Drama. Anyway. It's,
yeah.
So Myra and Ian made plans to meet up later on that same night, but they'd go to a different pub where nobody would really know them.
And, mm-hmm.
And after a few drinks, he took her to see the new biblical blockbuster King of Kings, because Myra absolutely ate that shit up because she was on her JC journey, so she was only loving this.
I'm so upset because I was absolutely expecting you to say Jesus Christ Superstar, even though I'm pretty sure that came out much later,
but look, she would have loved that too. And in the coming weeks, Ian would regularly take Myra out to the films and the pair would stay up late all night chatting about romantic things such as religion and Nazi Germany. So, you know, everything a girl could want to talk about. Everything.
I'm getting hot under the collar just thinking about it. Like, wish a man would talk to me about Nazis. I really do. And like how amazing they were and how, you know, it was just the best thing ever. Uh-huh. To start a genocide. It just... Mwah,
peace de resistance.
Ideal date.
She... Oh, yeah. She loved it.
Could only hope for such romance.
Oh my God. Could hope, but would I ever have it? No, because I'm not lucky enough. No. Not lucky enough.
Of course not. Maybe we shouldn't abolish Christmas parties. Then we could have such luck.
And Ian had also persuaded Myra to learn German so that the pair could speak covertly to one another. So they'd be walking down the road and they'd be speaking German to each other so nobody would understand what the fuck that they were saying. And I mean, they really, really did become obsessed with everything journey. Like, their typical date night was watching German pornos, followed by reading passages of Mein Kampf to one another and drinking German wine. Like, literally, that was their date night. And they fucking loved it. They fucking loved it.
Wow.
Losers! Like, you're so embarrassing!
Honestly.
And you know what's even more embarrassing? Like, this is when Myra decided to start turning, like, even a brighter blonde so she'd look more Aryan. I'm so embarrassed for you.
Of course.
She literally looked like Big Bird in a way.
Of course.
Like, she looks horrendous. Because her hair was always up in one of those, like, poofy styles.
In a wig.
The state of her. The fucking actual. Of course. Not even state, the fucking hack of her.
I can smell the spandex from her.
Oh, yeah. But she was, like.
Just by the hairstyle that you're describing.
She then tried to, like, cosplay as a Nazi as well, because she would wear like the hair up tight in like an army pin style. She would wear the bright red lipstick, like high boots, short skirts and leather jackets, literally trying to look like an army bitch. Like, it's so embarrassing. So embarrassing.
Oh my God. I'm mad. I am offended.
She's
and I only
the worst
live here.
Kind of
I'm
pick
offended.
Me because you're trying to be a pick me or a Nazi's pick me. It's disgusting. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like,
it's so embarrassing.
I know, when I'm Halloween costume shopping, it's always like sexy cat, sexy nurse, sexy cop, sexy Nazi. Like, you have your options.
You know?
Like, are they okay?
They're literally so fucking pathetic. But then they also started to create code words and gestures for each other, and this is going to be very, very important for later on, because they use these code words and they use these gestures with each other to commit their later crimes. So just say if they were to look at each other and raise their eyebrows twice, it meant follow the direction of my line of sight. Or if one of them spotted a good looking man or woman, they'd shout DC, which stood for delicious creature. And when I read that, I wanted to
That's so gross.
It's so disgusting.
Delicious creature.
Ew, it's actually
DC.
Like, how embarrassing. Imagine him like walking around, but oh yeah, DC. Would you fuck off, like, seriously? Get a grip.
Put him down.
Please.
please. Just for that alone. Just for that.
Oh, that for that alone, they deserve death. 100%. To come out with such an embarrassing statement such as that and expect to go on about your day-to-day life, I fucking think not, pet. I don't think so, my love.
Be ashamed of yourself.
Die.
Crawl in the corner and think about what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
DC.
Even though they were now, like, fully obsessed with each other, they kept their relationship a secret away from people in work or, like, their close friends. So if they were in work, they wouldn't even so much as go near each other. They would just sit across the room, throwing each other their stupid little fucking gestures. I'm sure they had, like, little embarrassing ones.
No.
Ew, 100%, that was part of the kink.
Oh, yeah, and they were like, oh, these people are just freaks, like.
People definitely figured it out and were like, this is fucking gross.
Yeah, so nobody just decided to comment
definitely.
On it. Yeah, I agree.
Meanwhile, they're just sat there like, we are the best.
Like,
nobody
ew, imagine
knows.
You
ha,
on
Bree,
Lizzie, and then the two creeps in work are like fucking throwing each other looks like, and you have to pretend that you don't notice. And then you're going out telling the girls, like, lads, I think they're together.
Oh, yeah, it would just become like you and the other work people thing. Like, that was just a strictly thing that, like, you would talk about. And never brought it to attention.
Definitely.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I guarantee
that. Oh, let them live their delusion that you don't know.
Because it'd be great, like, because if they don't know that you know, that they're going to be more obvious in front of you.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Yeah.
That would actually be so fun as well, because
they'll get more lax because they think they're getting away with it.
The crack you'd have talking about them would be fucking hilarious.
And then you develop your code for talking about them.
Why do I want that? I shouldn't be wanting people to laugh.
But like not the serial killer edition.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Obviously, like, I mean, I want people to skate. But people that deserve it, you know? Not some poor innocent fools, but
yeah.
People that deserve it.
Just like a shitty work romance where they think they're being all secretive, but everyone fucking knows. Like, who doesn't love that drama?
Oh yeah. Love it. In early 1962, Ian and Moira would discover the Saddleworth Moor, which became a burial site for some of their victims. And lads, I mean, the Saddleworth Moor is fucking huge. It's basically like bogland, but they have hills and stuff like that. I think it's like something crazy, like 29 square miles. Like, this place is fucking massive.
Oh, okay.
It's massive. And they would both later say that being in the moors was just pure serendipity. They fucking loved going there. But it's Mai even said when she went, like, knowing what had gone on there, it's just so fucking creepy, even though, because like, you don't know where they were walking. Or, do you know, it just creates, such a creepy feel. She said it was fucking sick.
Yeah, I'm like...
Yeah. Even like, if you look at, like,
they have
pictures...
some weird opinions fucking, about what serendipity is.
They really do. They really do. And in early 1963, the couple began to make plans to rob a string of banks. So they were all like, oh, well, okay, we're going to go on our Bonnie and Clyde shit. So funny that you mentioned it earlier on, because that's exactly the type of bullshit that they were going to now try and pull. And obviously they needed weapons for that. So Myra joined a gun club, so she was able to buy a weapon. Ian wasn't allowed to own a firearm because he was a sociopath that had been in prison. Obviously. So he was...
At least that.
Yeah.
At least
so
that.
So he was going to be in charge of getting the van and being the driver, right? Okay. And so, but he also thought, like, oh shit, like, we might need an accomplice. So they were like, who do we get? Meanwhile, when they were on their search for an accomplice, Ian had set up a dark room. Do you know the ones that you use for photography to take your pictures in and you know, you leave them up to dry and all that kind of shit, right?
Developing stuff.
And he was taking, like, I suppose, like, nude pictures of Myra or, yeah, right? So, you know, that's his business, that's his business. Do what you want. But then Myra's little sister, Maureen, who was 14 or 15 at the time, asked could Ian take pictures of her because she wanted to give them to her boyfriend David Smith. So Ian just started to ask her questions about David, like who he was, how did she meet him, all that type. And David also had come from a broken home, so his dad was in and out of prison and he was poorer than poor. Not to throw shade, but this kid was literally just looking after himself because nobody would look out for him, like they wouldn't. So, and he hadn't got a cent to his name, right? So Ian and Myra tried to take advantage of the situation because Myra and Maureen's family had judged David for being as poor as he was and didn't think that he'd be good enough for Maureen, which is like, love, you're literally, you know what I mean, people in glass houses throw stones, you know.
Yeah,
stop judging
David
here
when you have about 20 quid more than the fucking lad.
Yeah, exactly. So they wanted to take advantage of the fact, well, if we kind of put it to Dave that if he does us a favour, we'll give him money and we'll start to accept him into the family. Literally just all trying to play on this young lad's mind. And he was only 14, 15 at the time, right? So...
Yeah, and when you're piss poor, you will do anything for money. So if this is the family of the woman that you love, of all things, at that age, the only person who probably loves you...
Of course.
From the sounds of it,
mm-hmm.
like...
Of course.
Oh, this poor child.
But Moira never wanted Maureen involved with her plans in the first place, but she did need Maureen to introduce them to David. But she was very slow to do it. She was like, I don't really know. Like, I know what way the family thinks of David. I don't really feel like that is something I should be doing right now. So then
Wait, sorry.
Yes, what?
Sorry. She didn't want to introduce David to Moira because she was afraid Moira, the Nazi, would judge him?
Shocked. I know, it's a very, very shocking statement to fucking make. Hard to believe, really.
Okay.
You know?
I'm just going to sit here
and think about that for a minute.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say to like 90% of this stuff. I'm just like...
Because it's so baffling. It's like, lads, just what the fuck?
Yeah.
Literally what
Honestly.
The fuck?
Honestly. Like, here, I know I'm a Nazi and I'm asking you to get your new boyfriend to help us rob a bank, but like, he's also poor, so I might be a bit judgy of him.
But we're also robbing the bank because we're also poor. So.
Yeah, but like...
You know?
We're different
not that
kind of
poor,
though.
So
you're
we're better.
You're poor, like, you're like embarrassing poor. We're just like... You know, in a bit of a
we're upper class poor.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So much sense, you know?
Oh, that's so annoying.
So because Maureen wouldn't, you know, introduce the pair, not for a little while at least, anyway, the two of them decided, well, it'll be a great time to start fucking stalking a child, because they wanted to get a feel like, well, who is he? Who does he hang around with? What are his hobbies? They really wanted to get a good idea of him before they really involved him in the situation. They didn't want somebody blood related to them, so if they needed to throw somebody under the bus, they could. And David could fit that perfectly because he was still close enough that they could supposedly trust him, I guess.
Yeah.
So on their first stalking day of our man David, the couple had spotted him chatting to a neighbour of theirs, 16-year-old Pauline Reed. And Moira got very, very bitchy about this. She was like, oh, why the fuck is he chatting to her? Well, he's with my sister.
Oh,
that type of shit, right? Just fucking mind your business. They were literally in the same year in school. Like, of course they're going to be fucking talking to each other. They know each other. She knew Maureen.
Probably just
as well.
Asking her for homework or something.
You know what
like.
I mean? So, with the plan to rob a bank, Ian came up with a set of rules that he said, well, we have to follow this no matter what, because this is the only way we're going to be successful in our endeavour. And I'm going to read them out to you now, okay? So the first being, there must be no thread connecting the starting point with the destination. All surfaces must be free of tyre and footmarks, hairs, fibres and fingerprints. There must be duplicates of all clothing, including shoes. The set used in the day must be burned and the ashes thrown in the river. Buttons must be carefully counted and cleaned. The vehicle must be thoroughly cleaned and polished before and after the event. Both the inner workings and the outer surfaces of guns must be free of fingerprints. Bullet heads must be marked to turn them into shapeless masses, destroying all ballistic markings on impact. Plastic sheets must cover the interior of the vehicle. False number plates must be used, and the vehicle must be parked where it can be seen from overlooking windows. And all things used as a weapon must be broken up and disposed of over a wide area. So this was just their plan for robbing a bank.
I don't want to say it. I'm impressed.
Very impressed. He thought of everything.
I am so impressed.
He fucking thought of everything.
The ballistics of the bullets is the main
turning
point
them into
where I was
fucking
like,
mushroom bullets.
Oh, bitch.
So that they just poof out so you can't fucking tell what caliber was used.
Amazing.
It was really fucking clever.
Amazing.
It's so clever.
So clever. The only one I don't understand is why you would duplicate the exact same clothes.
So it's because...
I would like change your clothes completely, but...
So they wanted to be seen, right, in the same outfits that they were wearing. They'd go off and, or, you know, commit their monstrosities. And then burn the clothes.
I get it now.
No evidence on them, but... Oh, well, you were seeing
them
wearing the same clothes.
So then when they tested for any sort of forensics, they can be like, well, test me so.
Yeah, and there'd be nothing on them. They were seen wearing the same ones. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't aware that they had hoped to be seen so that they could like establish their own alibi at the same time, which is also kind of fucking genius.
My God.
I'm not praising them.
No, but it's like how fucking
but it's
smart. Like
But
we don't know why they decided to scrap their plans on robbing a bank. There was no rhyme, there was no reason given as to why, but they adopted the same plans that they had to rob a bank to commit much more heinous crime such as rape and murder. So the method that they were going to adopt for the bank robbing, they basically used to help them get away with murder and rape.
Yeah. Could have just robbed banks, lads.
You could have just robbed
banks
fucking
and
banks.
And then fucked off to the Costa del Sol and had like a great little life here, so I was on the beach drinking cocktails for the rest of your days.
Yeah. You
could have been that.
Part of the fucking day.
Could have been that.
Would have been so much easier. So on Friday, July 12th, 1963, Pauline Reed was on her way to a local dance hall, right? So she was going to the Railway Workers Social Club on Chapman Street. And when I mean, this was a 10-minute walk away from her house. Literally a 10-minute walk away, right? And Pauline had asked two of her best friends to go with her to the dance, but her and all her friends were raised like strictly Catholic, and her friends' parents had heard that drink was going to be sold at the dance, so they won't let the young ones go. So Pauline was like, oh, fuck, right, okay, I'll just meet some other friends there. So it left her to walk by herself, because I think her friends did live close by with her, and, you know, typical girls, like, we all would have got ready together and went to the dance together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
No, typical girl shit. But it was approximately 7:45 p.m. when Pauline had left for the dance. She wore a black blouse, a pink and gold shirt, a knitted cardigan and a blue coat and white stilettos. She was a moment. She was a vibe. She was preparing to have the time of her fucking life. She was going to go to a disco, meet all her friends. It was the height of summer. She was expecting to have a great time. And Pauline walked down Gorton Lane and she walked by a parked black van. And when she was walking by, she heard the squeak of a window being rolled out. So obviously she like turned to see, you know, what the fuck. And Moira popped her head out and she called out to Pauline and asked, you know, she was just asking her where she was going. And Pauline knew of Moira, sure, both from seeing her as being a close neighbour and for being Myrene's sister. So Pauline felt totally comfortable telling Moira, oh, well, I'm going to a dance, I'm going to meet my friends there. As you would, because, like, oh, she thinks she's just having a normal chat with somebody she knows. Yeah. You can't blame her. Like,
just chatting to the neighbour.
Exactly.
Like.
And then trying to make Pauline feel more comfortable, Moira then started to ask her, you know, how she was getting on in school. How were her friends? Because Domira would have known names of certain people that would have been fucking friends with Maureen that Pauline might have known. So she was trying to form like familiarity. Or how do you say the word? Familiarity.
Fuck, no, I can't say it.
Familiarity.
That one anyway. I'm struggling. That one. She was trying to form a bond with her to show like, well, okay, look, well, you can trust me. I'm nobody that you should be worrying about. And she then turns to Pauline and says, oh, by the way, I have some music records here in the van beside me. They're yours if you give me a hand. I need help with something. So Pauline's like, right, okay. So Moira had said to her, look, would you please come to the Saddleworth Moor with me? I lost a very expensive glove up there when I was up there this morning. If you do, look, the gloves are yours. But look, if not, no hassle. So Pauline was early to the dance anyway. So she thought, look, kill two birds with one stone. Kill some time and then look, I'm going to get a class record collection at the end of it and I can show all my friends when I meet them at the disco.
Yeah. I mean, how expensive records were and stuff.
And she was only a kid, like, so.
It's a big deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I'm also at the same time, I'm thinking, like, you've just been asked to go to the moors to look for a glove. You're wearing white heels, hon. What do you do?
I mean, yeah, why she's would sinking you ever... and that's so fucking bad.
So bad. And those heels are ruined. They're green now.
And even that, it's bog, so it's peat. Or brown, so it's, or whatever. It's like softer, so it's worse.
Yeah. Bad plan.
So the two of them then Pauline got into the van, should I say, with Moira, and the two of them set off then for the moors. And in the meantime, Ian Brady had gone to his mother's house to establish an alibi. And so he deliberately asked his parents, oh, Ma, what time is it? Just as he was about to head out the door. And he did that so if anybody ever did come knocking and asking questions, they'd have an exact time in their head because they would remember him asking. Oh, well, he was in the house at this
what
stage.
What time it
so
was before he left.
He couldn't be there.
Fuck.
You know?
Clever little cunt
is right. So Ian returned to Gorton Lane, where Moira had initially parked the van. And seeing that the van was no longer there, he knew that Moira had finally found a victim. So he got on his motorbike and he drove to the moors. So there was only two cars. Because not that there would have been a parking space, but there were places where people can pull in.
Yeah.
So there was only himself and the fucking black rapist van in the little park space, right? But he didn't know at this point who their victim would be. Would it be a boy or would it be a girl? They really didn't give a shit at this point. Just murder was like totally on their mind. Like, they really didn't give a fuck who they had taken. But I feel like Moira and so like intentionally went out of her way to make sure it was Pauline that they took, as in she could have fucking taken anybody. Like, we don't know how long she was fucking waiting there for Pauline to walk by, but the fact that she had caught Pauline talking to her little sister's boyfriend and she didn't like it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I don't think you're wrong, to be honest.
So Moira and Pauline,
which is so petty, like.
Oh no, exactly, that's exactly what it was. They, right, so the two girls were having a smoke, just waiting in the van, right? So Ian comes up to the window and Myra introduces him. She was like, oh, this is Ian, this is my boyfriend, Pauline, this is the girl that was trying to help me find my glove, she's so good, I'm going to give her my record collection for being so nice and kind and helping me. But then Myra suggests that, oh, shit, it's getting dark, maybe we should go out now and start looking before it gets too dark and we can't find it. But once that they were out of sight from passing cars on the road, Myra gave Ian one of their little code words. Do you remember how I'd mentioned earlier on that they had the little things? Yeah. So she gave him the code word Groucho. And once Ian heard this,
Groucho,
it's so stupid.
Oh, this is so embarrassing.
Like, I get you have to make something that, like, no normal person is going to have any inclination as to what you're talking about. Fucking come on.
You could say, please, oh, make it something. It could literally be something so basic as in, oh, we go to the shop later. I'd love to get an ice cream. And that's your fucking, like, why Groucho?
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
It's so,
and also, it's not subtle at all.
Yeah, because you're going to stop and hear them like, what the fuck did you just say?
Like, I know you don't want something that you could slip into any day conversation and then you're like Cuiva said, their ice cream, but you accidentally actually do want ice cream and all of a sudden now someone's dead.
Well, I suppose, like, you time know? And place, like, you're going to know, Groucho. Well, okay.
Well, yeah, that's true.
We're that using true. It in context, but, like, it's so stupid because if I heard someone saying a totally batshit word that made no context to any conversation we were having, I would stop, like, what the fuck are you even on about?
Duck for cover.
Yeah, I'm like, what are you talking
like,
about?
Like, yeah. I'd be like, something's wrong. Something's wrong with that. Like,
exactly.
I know you're speaking in code. Why?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when Ian heard this code word, he walked up behind Pauline, grabbed her by the head and put her in a chokehold. So Pauline then falls to the floor and Ian told her to be quiet and if she did, everything would be okay. Pauline now fucking totally panicked, thinking that, okay, well, Myra knows me. I kind of know Myra. Help me. She could be my savior in this situation. She's a fellow woman, like, because obviously she was getting fucking mad rape vibes off of Ian, as she would. So she's like,
I mean, fucking what
help me. But Myra literally turned to her, started smiling. I was like, be quiet, keep quiet. So Pauline started roaring that she was on her period because in her mind she was saying this in hopes that it would stop what she knew was coming. She hoped that it might deter him.
That it would deter him. Yeah. Oh, Christ, that is. No.
Yeah.
Oh.
But
it's awful.
It didn't work. And Myra got down and fully stripped Pauline. Like, she took off all her clothes and then began to literally molest this poor child. She started to, like, kiss all on her and everything. It's fucking gross. Like, it was disgusting. And then Pauline was, like, fucking frozen in place. Like, she couldn't do anything. She was so scared. So she couldn't even fight back because her body won't let her. Like, she was on shutdown mode. She couldn't fucking do anything. And then Ian undressed himself and the pair of them raped Pauline. The two of them did. And after the assault, Ian instructed Pauline to get dressed. So she put on her clothes and went to put back on her necklace. Because even fucking Myra took that off her as well. Anyway. But Myra grabbed it from her hand and said, you won't be needing this where you're going. But this made Ian fucking furious. And he turned around and bit her across the face. Shutting Myra up completely. Because I suppose, like, we knew they weren't just going to rape her and let her go on. But sure, she fucking knows Myra. She knows Ian, their neighbours. She's going to be able to tell people who had attacked her. So she obviously was going to die. But I think in Ian's head, Myra, don't be fucking spoiling the plan.
Yeah.
Like, don't be telling her what you're about to do.
Because they want to, like, make her believe, I guess, that she's going to be let go.
Yeah.
And then to see that fear again a second time.
Exactly. Exactly that.
That'd be my guess anyway.
Either that or it's easier to keep someone calm if they feel like they have a chance of getting away.
Yeah, that too.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Do you know?
That too. And Ian then left to go to the van. So he was like, right, Myra, you picked her up. You do it.
You kill her. No fucking
and
way.
And Myra had attempted to stab. I'm actually so embarrassed for this because you stupid fucking cunt. So not that I think that you should be well prepared. Well, if you are going to murder someone, not saying that you should be well prepared. I'm not saying this right at all, but this dopey bitch will understand what I'm saying. So Myra basically had attempted to stab Pauline in the chest with a knife, but the blade was bent, so there was no way it was going to be able to penetrate the skin. The blade was, like, completely curved. So
you come fucking prepared.
She might as well have been trying to stab her with a spoon.
Yeah, like they planned everything down to the plastic and the clothes and the
fucking... If you're going to be that
everything
planned
else.
Out... What are you doing?
And then you bring a bent knife.
So Myra then grabbed Pauline and started punching her multiple times in the face until her nose bled and Tri was like, she's trying to disorientate her. Because she had nothing fucking else to do at this point. And Ian had since returned because he was like, okay, well, she's taking a long fucking time. And he saw that Myra hadn't been able to kill Pauline. So he took out his own knife and cut her throat. blood gushed from her neck, but she didn't die. Like, he had stabbed her, but it wasn't anywhere fatal at this point. So Ian slashed her neck once more, severing her carotid artery, and she died within seconds. But now, do you remember how I had mentioned how Ian and Myra were taking, like, pervy pictures of one another in his, like, freaky little dark room that he had? They were hoping they were going to be able to do the same with Pauline's body and take the photo as a keepsake. But it had gotten too dark, so they weren't even able to take the photo in the first place. So they're like, right, okay, well, fuck it. We may move. So they dug a 4 or 5 foot hole into the soft peat. And Ian grabbed Pauline by her shoulders, Myra grabbed her by her legs, and they literally just threw her into the hole, covered her back up with the peat, and then Myra literally grabbed handfuls of grass by the root and would stamp them into the ground, like where the fresh peat had been since buried, to make it look like there wasn't a disturbance in the ground, and it kind of worked.
Oh my god.
It worked. So I was like, you had the brains to do that.
But not to bring a sharp knife.
No, I don't. It doesn't. It's fucking annoying, it's, like, honestly.
It doesn't add up. No. Like, yeah, it's...
so fucking stupid.
It's again, it's Pee Wee Gaskins all over again. It's like, how are you so smart but so fucking stupid at the same time?
Oh, fucking literally. But then, because the sick bastards, because they couldn't take their sick photo of poor Pauline, well, they might want to come back in the future. So they had counted the steps backwards from Pauline's burial site back to their van so that they could revisit it later on and take wonderful little picnic photos. So it was literally them, like, lying on the grass beside where they would have buried her and taking, like, lovely little poses and photos.
Right. Okay. But they weren't digging up the body again.
No. It was just, like, literally them lying on her gravesite. Like, where they had buried her.
Her grave, basically.
Yeah, and taking, like...
slap-chop grave.
Picturesque fucking photos.
Like, it's all sick, obviously, but, like, at least they weren't, like, digging her back up. Because, like, it's bad enough that they killed her, that they wanted to take bodies when she was, like... or pictures of her body when she was fresh.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But it's true, but to come back and dig her up and then take pictures is even worse. Like, that's,
I know it is.
It's just step too fucking far.
It is
already over the line.
No, you're not wrong. Christ. So adopting now their methodical plan that they'd come up with for the bank robberies, they changed out of their clothes, put on a fresh set. Myra headed back home with the clothes in the van, while Ian walked the moors and buried the knives and the shovel randomly throughout the moors. Like, I mean, he walked for hours, because Myra had arrived home and she saw that Pauline's mother was out searching for her, and it wasn't until 2:30 that morning that Ian finally had returned home. So he was walking for fucking miles and just scattering these three items so that they could never be found, because you wouldn't find it. Like, when I mean, the moors is that big.
Jesus.
It's fucking huge. So Myra had begun to cut up the clothes that they had worn during the murder and burn them. All the while, Pauline's dad had gotten out of bed to go to the social club to look for his missing daughter.
That is awful.
And that is where I'm going to finish up.
I hate this story.
Week. I hate these people so much.
I just had to very quickly there just go and have a look at them. Because obviously I've seen them before. I know what they look like. But to look at them again when you're going through the story and every little detail is something different.
Big Bird or Big Bird and Wing, innit? Or Joe the Man, or the one that looks like the eagle.
Not even
the falcon.
It's the two fucking...
the one in Sesame Street.
Oh my god, yes.
Him and a wig is...
yeah.
Myra Hindley. 100%. Yeah.
It's like the big fat nose, the thin lips, the giant hair and the dead eyes. It's just, it's a whole situation.
Yeah, for sure.
And he does look like a Nazi, to be honest. He does.
Yeah, I see.
So I could see it.
But yeah.
I'd say someone when he was young was just like, you Nazi looking motherfucker. And then he was like,
Thank you. Compliment.
And then made that his whole personality. Yeah.
He was like, let me just lean into it.
Yeah. Like, oh my God. Horrendous. Mm-hmm. Horrendous.
And there's much, like, there's more detail about, like, after, like, Pauline had gone missing and everything. I personally did not have the brain capability to mention that, so I'm going to pass the gauntlet. Yeah, you can take that one.
Yes, well, I mean, we need to, because I have to leave some victims for Cuiva. I can't be covering them all the time. So, I'll go through the detail in extreme pain next week. I don't look forward to it at all. Yeah. Why did we pick this? We're always like, oh, this will make such a good story. And then we forget that it actually physically hurts us to talk about it.
It makes me so
tired. To actually go through
it's
it. It's like
a form of self-harm. Like, I'm not trying to trigger anybody, but genuinely.
It really is.
Fucking genuinely.
It feels like very, like, self-sabotage-y.
It's like do it for the vine, but it's do it for the podcast.
Yeah. Even though it hurts us.
It's, okay. I hate them both. Oh my God. Sorry, I just got distracted by my own Google search. It's here in German for some reason, so Germany knows about them too. But it's the British hate them more than Hitler, is what the caption says underneath the picture.
Yeah.
Says the British hate them more than Hitler.
She was like literally dubbed.
The irony. Don't, that's a compliment for
like,
them.
She was literally dubbed Britain's most hated woman and everything. It's,
I mean, to compete with Maggie Thatcher.
Very fair. And Rose West at the time, because the two of them ended up in prison at the same time and were besties. Which is why were they even allowed to interact?
Honestly.
Like swapping.
They should
stories,
not be like giving each other hints and tips. Like, yeah.
Well, we hid this one up the bog. Oh, I hid mine underneath stairs. You know, it just said, no, no, stop it.
It's not okay. It's not fucking okay. And I'm sure we will traumatize ourselves with Fred and Rose West at some point as well. So fear thee not.
Standard practice.
We'll be going there. But yeah, as I was saying before I got distracted by the fucking title there on the picture. Obviously, we hate them both. They're both fucking chronic pieces of shit. And fuck both of them. They deserve no sympathy. But I can at least see why Myra was fucked in the head. You know what I mean? She at least had like sort of not an excuse, but she had your typical upbringing of someone who turns around to do horrendous things. But not Ian.
He was definitely like the instigator, but still she willingly decided to molest and rape kids.
Oh no, Savannah's saying they did the same. They did the same. She,
no.
She was raised.
Oh no, I get that. But then like, I still don't like, it's not an excuse
I'm not excusing her at all.
There's so many
people
that would have been put in her situation that like didn't do horrendous shit, so like
I never would have done anything like that.
No, she's more so saying that like Ian is nearly a little bit worse because he should have known.
He had no reason to turn out the way that he did, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You know, she's what we're used to in the serial killer world and not. Yeah, he had a great childhood. He had all the opportunities handed to him. He just still chose to be a piece of shit.
I feel like with them, it's the whole like
slightly more mad
nature versus nurture thing. Like they're either side of that coin. Like him being obviously nature and her being the way that she was fucking.
Definitely.
Reared, I suppose.
Raised into it.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's the argument that we're constantly saying that there isn't just, like, you can't be turned into a serial killer. You have to have it in you at the same time. It is definitely that. Like, it's a really good example of that. But it's just, I'm like, you had so many opportunities to not turn into a piece of shit. And you still did.
No, for sure.
It's just, but no, you can see it. He is, there's nothing, like, nothing behind the eyes.
Oh, they're so soulless.
Like, I have never, no, once. There's been one time where I've looked at one of the killers that we have covered, and that was the guy who killed Karen Buckley. That was the only other time where I've looked at the picture of them and been like, yeah, I can see it behind the eyes.
That Alexander Pakhtov,
you know what
bastard.
I mean?
Yeah, you could see it in him.
That's a fucking piece of chronic neckless shit. But with these, I get the exact same, like, vibe off of the picture.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse, would you believe?
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to be so miserable next week. Yeah, I can't wait.
I'm so excited for you.
Excited to want to die. I mean, what else is there to say? We all know where this is going. It's just more and more child murder. It's not getting any better.
Only worse from here on out.
We've been here before. Mm-hmm. We like to bring ourselves on the same torturous journey.
We literally just die at the end of like a really a heavy one, because it's great. We always start with a bit of laugh, a few giggles, because we like to take the pace, and then at the end it's just like, what is my entire life?
Misery.
Yeah, it's just misery.
Yeah, it's like you have to hope for the best that they at least did something funny throughout their journey so that we can lighten it up again. But apart from slagging the sheer stupidity along the way, there wasn't really much of that.
No. Unfortunately,
no. No.
I can't wrap my head around it. Like, I know I said, okay, you know, she had childhood and stuff like that. But like I said, it's not an excuse. And it doesn't make it any more understandable. It's just, it's what we're used to. I can't understand how they went from bit of kinky German porn and, Mein Kampf. That includes quite a lot of fucking murder. But then, like, they were just going to rob banks.
I don't know. No, but that's
how did that escalate
so fast? Nobody knows
where
it came from. Like the switch
up.
But like she even said herself, if he would have turned around and told her that sky was made of grass, she'd believe him. Like he had her.
She does look, I'm not even being funny, but she does look like a little bit simple or something.
It's the,
do you know,
gawky eyes, I think, make her look.
It is.
But she does look like she was a little bit gormless. God bless her, fuck her. God bless her. Don't bless her. But but you know what I mean? Like I feel like he looks like he was smart. She really doesn't.
But as well, I think he definitely took advantage of her infatuation with him. And, oh, well, if I say jump, she's saying, well, tell me fucking how high, I bet.
If she, and especially if she was raised by her, the way she was raised by her dad, it was like she probably kind of fed into the whole, like, just,
well, it makes me laugh, like,
thing.
Her dad was out fighting Nazis in the war, and there she was like, oh, well, I want to become one. Like, where do you make that cross?
Yeah.
I suppose it is probably,
that's
like
rebellion,
a soft rebellion sort of thing. Yeah.
I'd say she was just beyond fucked mentally, like, and it just,
yeah,
like, I don't know, like, neither of them are right, but she just seems to be really fucking twisted.
Like, there's that for sure. And for the time, I suppose he would probably have been considered, like, kind of handsome. And then you have her, who literally does look like Big Bird, so she probably didn't have a lot of options. And then to her, he was, like, the best looking man in the world. So she was like,
I mean, she was grand.
No man will touch me, but this guy will. You know what I mean?
Both of them seem
Quiva,
like,
let's be honest with ourselves, okay? We don't like to be judgmental bitches on this podcast. But
genuine, I'm not saying that she was good looking, but she was
even
normal.
Even by past,
like,
standards, I think she's a fucking...
That mugshot, like, was very bad.
Sorry.
I don't think he was any better looking than her.
Like, as someone in the big nose committee, she puts me to shame. And
I think
the lack
they were
of chin.
Both equally bad looking.
I agree.
She has a massive chin.
No, what, you need to see the side profile that I'm looking at, because it just disappears. It's like... into the neck.
Oh, it does. It melts, like, into her neck.
Double chin.
Fierce bad.
Yeah, it's gone. She's like, and then, like, just the fact that she looks like a fucking weirdo. Like, I just can't see any other man touching off her. And then Ian comes along. She's obsessed with him. She thinks he's fucking the best thing since sliced pan. He's gorgeous. And then he gives her the time of day. So, of course, she will fucking... He could put her on a leash and fucking drag her around like a dog. And she'd be like, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
But she, like, again, she was not forced into it. She willingly did it.
No, it's not making excuses. It's just, like, it's just interesting
yeah.
the way, like, their fucking minds
yeah,
work. Because,
for sure.
Honestly.
Like, you're never going to know why they did what they did, aside from they're both fucked in the
yeah.
head.
No. This is it. Like, we like to sit here and make assumptions and act like we know, but we don't. We're just going on our best theories.
Yeah. Because it's really anyone's fucking guess at
but
this
isn't
point.
That how these things get solved?
Because they were literally
exactly.
mum's a fucking word, like, they didn't open their mouths.
Oh, so why would they be giving away their secrets, like,
sick little bastards?
They were so clever.
Go ahead.
Groucho. It has sufficiently vexed me, and I'm not looking forward to next week, but also kind of looking forward to next week, because it's 1 week closer to being done with yet another horrendous story. We do it for the listeners.
We do it for you.
Yeah, so I guess we'll wrap it up there. As we've already said, I'll be back next week with part 2. And then, as usual, we will be back after that with part 3. I don't think we have anything to say for the rest of this week, do we?
My brain has just gone to mush, so I do not have yet again a cohesive thought to add.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we're back consistently week by week posting now. We shouldn't have any more big interruptions, but, you know, life. So can't promise that, but I think we're back week to week now. So you can expect to hear from us, as usual, on our Friday or Saturday if work gets in the way. So that's good to know. And other than that, I'm just going to wish everyone some positive vibes and negative tests, and always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our club.